It is time for the podcast to start.
Yeah. I'm checking my Sheffield All Sport watch.
And speaking of time.
Definitely time to start.
What is amazing is this thing is just like, so sometimes I won't wear it for a few days. It's always still accurate. I don't know how that's possible because it definitely dies.
It has a battery.
Oh, does it really?
Yes.
I thought they were like the
Sport Loom. No, the Sport Loom, I believe, is just battery powered. It's not the solar quartz. Oh. I'm pretty sure. The All Sport Diver is the solar quartz.
Gotcha.
So this one, it'll also charge under like LED lights and stuff. It doesn't have to just be sunlight.
Well, no, can't you? That's the one you wind too as well. I'm very smart with watches.
No, it doesn't wind.
Oh, what did I? I had an All Sport when we started this shindig that I wound up, and then it would like my movement would keep it.
But that's an automatic movement.
Okay, so yeah. I had the first watch I had was an automatic,
yes.
Which is slick.
Yes.
I didn't know this was battery powered. My life has changed. Maybe this isn't the pre-show.
But this one
is this is like, good banter.
We are non-watch people that just appreciate watches.
Yeah, 100%.
I've always said I'm not a watch person. Ethan, you're like, oh, that's crap. Were you telling me I wasn't a watch person?
I think that you're
I'm not
more
a watch
of
person.
A watch person than the average
I am
person.
A poser. I am a car guy, despite what some of my critics will say.
Yeah, fair.
I am not a watch person. I will never
based
be.
Based on what?
I
because
like
you
watches.
Don't use a diver watch for its intended purpose? Neither do 90%
no,
of watch guys.
I don't know, like, the nerdy stuff. Like,
you just described the difference between a quartz and an automatic and a mechanical.
That
you
is
just,
like
you just,
the,
you know
very
these.
Basic. And
very
I
basic.
Probably screwed something up in that description, too. And
stuff
all of that,
know.
Like, has been explained to me or I've learned or whatever.
Yeah.
But, like, I don't know. When I first got my Rolex, I didn't understand how the 24-hour thing worked and like how to set a date at the right like 12-hour sequence. Like,
yeah,
I don't
well,
know.
Well, that is confusing. You know, let's.
It really isn't, but I've learned.
It was confusing.
I'm trying to
give
you an out here, man.
Welcome back to Switchcast Season 5. I'm your host, Doug Tabbitt, here with my co-host, Tyler Sanders. We are the automotive news and entertainment show that's not just for car people and definitely not just for watch people either, but we are brought to you by Sheffield All Sport Watches. And we're all rocking ours tonight, except Ethan Huffnagel, the off-camera executive assistant to the regional producer.
I'm allowed to do that, though. Well, Sheffield don't do a field watch, which is the watch that I'm wearing tonight. So if I wanted to wear a field watch, I'm allowed to choose another brand.
There you go.
It's fair.
Absolutely.
I do have a Sheffield, and I'll tell you what, I love it, and I wear it all the time. Doug can attest to this. I do wear it all the time, but not tonight.
I wore mine to the Schwitz. Because when I bought my first Rolex, which is like the first actual big boy watch I bought,
yeah.
The owner of the store was like, he'd do this party trick. He'd just like throw it in his martini at the Christmas party and everybody would be like, oh.
Pretty good.
And he's like, hey, listen, your Rolex can go anywhere you can. Like a good watch should be able to do that.
Mm-hmm. I do love being in a martini. I tell you what.
Who? I'll live that one alone. But I like wearing my watch to the Schwitz because, like, cold, hot, whatever, sweaty, it's a metal band, stuff like that. So most of my watches I can't wear there because they're leather band. But the Sheffield, I can. That's a good one because it's got a nice rubber strap and it's a go anywhere watch. So I was like, all right, I can wear this one anywhere. Okay. Warm-up lap, as if we didn't give you enough already.
What?
We've talked about, we started this discussion with the Montana LLCs, right? The beneficial ownership rule, which is part of the FinCEN, the Financial Enforcement Crimes Network, whatever that government department is. And it had to do with whether or not you could get away with or whether or not it was a good idea to try to get away with having a Montana LLC to avoid sales tax on your vehicles. And the beneficial ownership filing discussion came into play because that essentially makes people reveal the ownership of domestic and foreign corporations. And it has gone back and forth so many times. Texas sued the federal government to get it overturned, whatever. It can't be overturned because it was a law enacted by Congress. So essentially they were just pausing the enforcement of it. And then it was like overturned again. So then it became active. And then, I don't know, we've been back and forth on this so many times, but like a 2 weeks ago, an email went out to all the Ohio dealers saying, yep, you have to report this. This is full on active again. Well, just recently, the attorney general or somebody in Trump's administration announced that I think it was Department of Justice. That's what it was. They said they would not be enforcing this rule. So yet again, it's changed.
This way and that way and this way.
Now, key thing here. That does not repeal the law. The law is still on the books because it was passed by Congress. All that means is the current administration is not enforcing it. So whether or not you should file, that's something you got to talk to your accountant about, your lawyer, whatever. It's just funny because it just keeps going back and forth. Do we really care about the ins and outs of political stuff on this show? No, we don't. But it has to do with Montana LLCs, which has to do with cars and the cost to own them. So it's interesting because we keep watching this go back and forth. But on to our main topic. I don't know how many of you remember when eBay was a powerhouse in the automotive auction space. They definitely are not anymore, but they used to be. And one of the big components to eBay auctions was the second chance offer. If a vehicle didn't meet reserve, you get a second chance offer from the seller. But it was rife with scams because before they made the ability to have your bidder handle, your bidder information private, anybody could see who all the underbidders were. So scammers would send fake second chance offers to all the bidders on all these auctions. And it was just, you get scam offers all the time. And, you know, anyone who knew what to look for in a scam could see it, sniff it out pretty easily. But I'm sure people got taken because, you know, why would scammers do it if it didn't work? We got a tip from a friend of the podcast that is happening again, not on Bring a Trailer, but on some of the high-end current auctions. And this one in particular was on Bring a Trailer. Now we want to tread carefully here, because we don't want to accuse Bring a Trailer of anything or say that there's something going on when there isn't. We love using Bring a Trailer, but we're discussing real issues here, and we don't want to say that, we don't want to sensationalize this and say, oh, man, there's a big cybersecurity hack or something like that that's affecting Bring a Trailer. There isn't that we know of. We did talk to Bring a Trailer, and they have said that this issue that we're going to talk about is not something that is common or rampant. It's not something that has been happening en masse like it was with eBay. Apart from that, they can't discuss internals of their cybersecurity policies, partly to protect their registered bidders, because if they discuss them and we talk about them, then that, you know, gives information to the wrong people as well.
Yes. Well, I think it's important to remember just how many vehicles Bring a Trailer auctions every day.
Right.
That if something... if a weird situation happens or if seller backs out, like any of the things that occasionally will make headlines or be, you know, drama from a Bring a Trailer or any other auction site listing.
Yep.
It doesn't mean it happens all the time. You have to think of context as well. And I think in our experience and what I have seen even personally, that when things abnormal do happen, I think they're handled pretty well.
That's correct. And that was one thing, we'll get to this later. Bring a Trailer said, if you have any questions or you think you got a fraudulent offer, if you have any concerns about scams, contact them. They are on it. They love to respond. Even their general mailbox, mail@bringatrailer.com. They are constantly monitoring stuff and they pride themselves on their response. So this is not a takedown of Bring a Trailer nor a commercial for Bring a Trailer. This is an honest discussion about what happened. So this guy bid on a Jeep and he got a message from supposedly the seller, but it wasn't. Saying the item is available again. I noticed that you bid on the auction. I want to reach out to see if you are still interested in purchasing it so we can discuss further. Please let me know if you're still interested and we can discuss the further details. The sale was not completed, so I'd like to offer a resale opportunity to all interested bidders. So the would-be buyer responded to the would-be seller, scammer. We're just going to, they are a scammer, but.
And this was an email, right?
Yeah, this was okay. All through email, right? Yes, I'm still interested in purchasing the vehicle. So then the scammer says the sale fell through because a winning bidder was unable to complete the payment due to issues with his bank. Given the situation, I reached out to all interested parties to see if they were still interested. As part of the new agreement, I am offering free shipping to the next buyer and there will be no auction fees or additional taxes, only the price of the car. Based on this, what is your budget for the car?
They can control taxes.
yes, right? Right? So the buyer said my offer would be 55 grand, which was 20 grand below the sale price of the car, but I'd want to get a PPI completed before closing. The seller, quote unquote, said, as I told you, the previous transaction was a disaster. I had to accept a deal with the escrow company that BAT recommended so as not to lose all the money for shipping and taxes. That's nonsensical.
Because the seller pays taxes.
Right? The winner wanted me to deliver the car to his address. The car has already been inspected by a Bring a Trailer agent, and the escrow transaction has a 30-day guarantee during which you can check the car from any point of view.
Ah.
Left, walk around. Right. Yeah. Top.
You can walk around the car. Get your eyeballs on it.
Oh, man. So then the scammer again goes on. There are several offers for the car at the moment, but as I mentioned, the situation caused by the original winner has left things a bit complicated. That said, I'm ready to move forward with the buyer who is truly prepared to complete the transaction. Your offer is fair and I'm ready to accept it. There's red flag number two. Red flag number one was I'll ship the car to you to inspect. That is age old scammer tactic. They make you feel abnormally secure in doing the transaction. Yeah. If you feel a little bit sketched out, like, ooh, I could get screwed, then it's probably a safe transaction. If you feel like there is no possible way anything could go wrong, probably a scam. But yes, if they take your offer and it's completely low and they don't negotiate, also probably a scam. So he says, would you like me to explain how the transaction works? The transaction is quite simple. I've coordinated everything with the escrow company so we can proceed and redirect the shipping to you. Escrow, also likely a scam. There are good escrow companies out there, but yeah.
Scammers. Isn't it something scammers like lean into for that sense of security? They're like, oh, well, the money's not even in my hands. It's over there. Like,
yes.
Allegedly.
Yeah. I will initiate the escrow transaction. You will be contacted by them with the invoice documents and payment instructions. Once you complete the payment and it is confirmed, the car will be shipped and you will be contacted by the transport company to finalize the delivery details.
Well, that sounds so easy.
To initiate the transaction, I will need your full name and the complete address where the car will be delivered. So the seller asks some legitimate questions like what's the name of the escrow company? What's the name of the transport company, et cetera, et cetera. Let's see, they go back and forth and the buyer kind of leads him on for a bit, asking if he's received, things and stuff. And so then I love this. The buyer says, my bank is requiring an incoming transfer to my account before they will let me transfer funds out. They said it needs to be a minimum of 20% of the amount that I need to transfer out from the account, and it needs to come from the account that will be receiving my funds. Apparently, this helps build trust between the parties. Can you transfer $11,000 to my account so that I can add you as a recipient?
Oh, that's so good.
The scammer did not respond after that.
They're like, nope, I'm getting out.
Oh, man, I love it. I love the that he's leading the scammer along. But in all of this, there's some easy things to learn, right? Okay, if they want to use an escrow company, likely a scam. That used to be an automatic scam, although there are good companies now like Caramel and Key Savvy that will actually escrow the transaction, but you want to use somebody you know and you know is a real company. Bring a Trailer will never, ever use the term agent. They don't have agents. They don't inspect vehicles. They are not a part of the transaction. They do have the Bring a Trailer verified checkout, but that is only for people who actually win the auction through the process, right? And that is a third-party company. I believe they use Caramel. But it, like, they'll never say, oh, it's secured by us, or it's our agent, or we've inspected the vehicle, or it's our shipping company. Bring a Trailer does not secure the transaction. They are an advertising website, an advertising platform that connects buyers and sellers.
100%.
They don't offer a guarantee. And any communication after the fact, right? So there's no mechanism by which the high bidder, the seller and anyone except the high bidder can be in contact. They do not provide that information. There's no database that the seller can look at all the bidder's information. It's completely anonymous. It's completely secured by Bring a Trailer in order to protect the auction process. So the only time you would ever be contacted post-auction if you did not win the car or you were not the high bidder would be directly from Bring a Trailer. The only exception to that is if you click the contact seller button during the auction, because then that connects you directly with the seller and you can email back and forth. In this case, the buyer did not do that. So how his information was obtained by the scammer, we don't know. Don't know.
Well, and I think a lot of other auction sites do the same thing where you cannot get in contact with anybody but the high bidder, which I think just makes sense. Like, obviously, the high bidder was the one interested. You can't guarantee anyone else was realistically interested.
Right. Right. But the connection or the communication you would get from Bring a Trailer always comes from a, you know, mail at support@bringatrailer.com. And it will have a person's name in the signature, a real person. So about 2 weeks after I got this email about the scam, I got a call from one of my customers saying, hey, I got an offer to buy a car and Bring a Trailer that didn't meet reserve. Should I do it? I said, no, it's a scam. It's a scam. And then he forwarded me the actual email. I was like, oh, no, sorry, that's actually legit. It was an email from Bring a Trailer, had a name in the signature, had their logo, had their phone number. And all they said was, if you're interested, we'll connect you with the high bidder. That's it. They didn't say we've inspected this car, we'll secure it. Yeah. Like, it was a very simple, straightforward email. So there's very easy ways to differentiate between a real and a fake second chance offer. And it's very rare, in fact, that you'll even get a second chance offer. I mean, most deals go through.
Well, and I think you also need to be careful and follow what I would probably consider just good anti-phishing or anti, you know, whatever practices. If you work for a corporation, I wouldn't be surprised if you have had internal training from your IT department on these kinds of things. But you want to take a look at, like, email addresses. Like you said, it'll be from @bringatrailer.com. Make sure that the I isn't like a capital or an L or like something that at a glance might look okay, but isn't actually. We see a lot of that. So it could be like, instead of bringatrailer.com, it could be BRLNG. But then if you're just kind of like glancing over, it looks fine. So weird email addresses. Don't click on links you don't trust. Like, if you hover over a link, your mail platform will show you what that link is and where it's taking you. You know, you just kind of got to have a bit of a sense about, like, that doesn't feel right. Kind of going back to what you said, like, if there's, you know, if you feel overly comfortable or if they're trying to make you feel overly comfortable, something's up. Like, something's a little weird.
Right.
And so you just kind of exercise some internet caution, I guess, because it's folks are getting pretty creative. I've gotten some emails from some phishing scammers that looked like they came from Microsoft. They were like scary good. And I think it was the email from address that got me that I was like, oh no, that ain't it.
Yeah. And what confuses me is I've gotten emails from Doug@switchcars.com.
Like, wait a second.
And I'm like, how do they do that? Is it like email masking, or like, how do they send me an email from me?
There are ways to do like stuff like that where there's some, I don't truthfully know how it works, but there's some way to like put a name over an email address. And that's why you got to be careful, because sometimes it'll be like, oh, this came from Doug.
But and then you look at the email. If I hover over the email, you are, because an email address is like a URL. If I hover over that or like reply to it, click on it, will it show me the real? Because if I like reply to that, it doesn't come to me.
No, I would guess that there's some letter that's slightly different, and it just looks, so maybe if you hit reply, then it would come up with the actual email and you'd be like, oh, this is some random string of letters at switch, you know, capital A, or no, the capitals don't matter.
No,
but,
they
know,
don't.
Like,
come on, boomer.
But something where they've switched around, there'd be an S, a dollar sign instead of an S somewhere or something like that.
Interesting. The other thing that Bring a Trailer mentioned as good practice is you should never use your email address as your bidder handle.
Ah.
Right? Because a lot of scammers will basically just like play the odds and be like, well, they either have Hotmail or Gmail or Yahoo or whatever. And so if their bidder name is like, you know, I got to ask my wife, and your email is I got to ask my wife at gmail.com, like, you're probably open to a lot more spam emails. So be careful there. Now, again, in this situation, I Googled the guy's username. I tried to do a little digging. Like, I wonder how somebody could have come up with it. And there was nothing. Like, he had not used his name, his email, whatever. He had not contacted the seller. So there was no scenario in which it was easy. Like, he didn't have a forum handle on some other place. Like, there was no trail attached to his Bring a Trailer username. So it's really odd in terms of how the scammer got his information.
I wish I could speak to that, because I'm sure it's like really interesting, although creepy, that it happened at all. But it's kind of amazing what people are able to piece together.
Right.
Just by information that's out there.
Let's put it this way, though. Like, I have switchcars@gmail. I have, you know, switchcars is my website, etc. Like, I'm very easily findable, which is on purpose on these auctions, right? Want to build the brand, et cetera. That's literally how I got your pace car, actually.
Yes,
is I
amazing.
Was one of the underbidders, so I didn't get the second chance offer, but I commented in the auction, which you're not really supposed to do. I'm like, hey, I'm still interested. And then they could Google my username and then find me, which is what you don't want if you're a private bidder. But as a company, I want that. But I have never gotten offered, to my memory, I've never gotten offered, because I think I would have messed with them, any sort of false spam second chance offer from any of the auctions, including Bring a Trailer. So to that end, I don't think this is rampant. I don't know how this guy's information got to the scammer. But like, my information's easily findable, and I've bid on hundreds of auctions that I haven't won, and I've never gotten that information.
And this is so specific. Like, you know, I feel like if you're gonna be a scammer, you want to cast a wide net. So
this
you can
guy
catch
just
someone.
Bid on two Jeeps.
Yeah, and that's that so. That's the other thing that is very bizarre that I'm kind of fascinated by, is like, this is such a specific thing. How did this happen? How is it worthwhile for that scammer to reach out to this person, to figure out this link and then find a way to reach out to them? Wild.
That's a very good question. That's a very good question. We tried to answer it. We did not get any good answers, but there's some at least helpful information on how to sniff it out if it does happen, and also how to avoid it and how to protect your personal information. With that, let's go to the Shrewd Negotiator. Different kind of scam kind of on this one. I got offered a roof.
Ooh.
Turbo.
Those
well,
are all
some
the
roof
hotness.
Parts on it. It wasn't a real roof, which I knew, but I like supposedly it had a bunch of roof modifications. But I got the text on the information on this car, and immediately I was like, well, this doesn't make sense, because this was his for sale information. Let's see, 1980 roof wide body turbo, parentheses, Yellowbird. So already some problems. The Yellowbird wasn't a wide body. It started as a 911 3.2. They didn't even start making them until 86. So I'm like, okay, all sorts of things wrong here.
Oh, this is one of the early ones, Doug.
Yeah, it was a 930 Yellowbird. No, full roof specs and all badges and emblems. Fully rebuilt motor with roof intercooler and roof engine stamps and badging. Roof VIN plate, blah, blah, blah. $99,000. I'm like, I'm in. I'll take it. I don't care if, I'm sure it's just a bunch of roof parts, but fine. I want it. It's a nice 930. Well, yeah, it fell apart very quickly, as I anticipated, because most of these modified 930s that gets offered are not that. So I asked him a few more questions, and he said it was twice as fast as a real Yellowbird.
Wow.
Which is amazing, because it would have to be, it was the fastest car in the world at the time. It was like 210 miles an hour. So I'm thinking 420 miles an hour.
Get out of here, McLaren F1.
I mean, or 0 to 60 in 1.8 seconds.
Yeah. Suck on that, Rimac, Tesla, whatever.
Sure.
EV.
Okay. Like,
I don't know.
Then he claimed that Roof gave him all the badging and the VIN plates for free.
Ah, that makes sense.
Because he used to own a real Yellowbird.
Yep.
Roof, of course, denies all of this. They never give out or sell VIN tags, obviously.
Yeah, it sounds like illegal.
Yikes. So, but the crazy thing is, I found the car on Bring a Trailer and P Car Market like 6 months ago, and it was a white 930 that was quite poorly built. It got bid to like 48 grand for a 930. I mean, we haven't seen those prices since 2012.
Whew.
And apparently in like 6 months, he slapped a bunch of quote unquote roof parts on it, painted it yellow, cut the NACA duct in the rear fender, put different seats in, whatever. But if you look closely, the guy literally just put like a roof badge on. It had an Andial intercooler, and he just like spray painted black and then put a roof badge on top of it.
Amazing.
And yes, he did have a roof VIN plate. I thought about calling him to troll him on the podcast, but
was it a VIN from a different car?
No, the VIN is correct to the car, but it just says like roof on it. That's this roof VIN plate that also says 911 SC. And then
that's amazing.
So it's a 911 SC turbo wide body Yellowbird roof CTR, whatever.
That's an onion I do not want to peel apart. No, thank you.
More like peeling a lemon.
Nuts for Sticks is a brand celebrating the manual transmission in all its forms. So forget those flappy paddles, because we like shifting ourselves. Check out our fun and funny stick themed shirts at nutsforsticks.com and save 10% on your order using the discount code SWITCHCAST. That's nutsforsticks.com and use code SWITCHCAST.
Minute ago, we did some negative reviews and how to respond to them. We've got a doozy this week, an absolute doozy. Let me give you the backstory, then I'll give you the review, and then we put it out to our Instagram fam for possible responses, some of them politically correct, some not. And I got to tell you, our followers are far funnier than I am. If I could have them write all my jokes, this podcast would be much, much more entertaining. But
I never thought that I would hear you say Instagram fam. This is what a world we live in.
I mean, the responses, I felt like it was family. It was like sitting around a dinner table and everybody just throwing it up. But this was great. So the review is, let me give you the backstory, then I'll give you the review right now.
What a dramatic pause, Doug.
Customer was interested in a 996 Targa.
Nice.
Couple weeks of back and forth. At one point, he didn't even respond to our sales guy for a week. So, you know, real hot lead, right?
He didn't want that too bad.
Yes. And asked a bunch of questions. Sales guy sent him a bunch of photos, et cetera, et cetera. They talked about inspections. He wanted to come see it. Our standard deposit policy is as follows. It's a deposit to hold the vehicle for specific contingencies outlined in the contract. The price is agreed upon, and it's a 5-day maximum hold, right? If you can't get your crap together in 5 days, then whatever, you're not going to buy the car. There's exceptions, but that's our standard policy.
Well, and I feel like even with like delays and moving some money around and stuff, like 5 days is an ample amount of time.
Sure. And again, there's specific like, oh, hey, well, I've got this approval letter from the bank, but shoot, I needed this document a couple extra days. Fine. Stuff like that. But it's really, honestly, it's to prevent issues like this guy where people want to drag out a deal just for the sake of dragging it out. And it's a wonderful policy because it prevents the tire kickers, the perpetual tire kickers. Not to say that everybody that takes longer 5 days to perform their due diligence is not a real buyer, but like using the box and whisker plot, you know, the
stats.
Yeah. They're the outliers. Okay. So he was not ready to conclude the deal. We informed him about the deposit, said, here's our policy. He's like, well, I can't come until next Tuesday, so I can't put a deposit down because that's more than 5 days, but I want to order a Lemon Squad inspection. We're like, that's fine. You can do that. Like you can have an inspection done, but like we need a deposit in order to hold the car, to secure the car. And he didn't want to do that. And didn't place a deposit, finally ordered the Lemon Squad inspection, informed us that he did. We didn't get any word from Lemon Squad, though. So it's basically like the equivalent of some guy saying, hey, I'm sending my buddy over to look at it in a couple days, right? Like, that's cool. That doesn't mean you're buying the car. And we had discussed price and loosely agreed upon price. But again, there was no formal deal, formal agreement. No, I am buying this car for this price as long as Lemon Squad checks out. And I'm ready to place a deposit. None of that. No commitment on his end. Within like the same day he ordered the Lemon Squad inspection, somebody else who had also had an inspection done placed a deposit and then wired money within 48 hours. So it's actually kind of wonderful. I love the poetic justice when a tire kicker like gets, you know, booted. And I did not plan the kicking and booting thing, but that was yeah, accidentally brilliant. And he lost his ever loving mind, basically saying, we had a deal, blah blah blah, this is not going to end well for you guys.
Who,
like,
scary.
Okay, we didn't have a deal. Even if there's an agreement on price, there wasn't an agreement on terms, and there's definitely not anything signed, and there was no deposit, and you had an opportunity to place a deposit, and you still wanted to come see the car after the inspection. You couldn't make it happen in time. Like, so sorry, you lost. So here's his review. 1 star, probably would have given us 0, but that wasn't an option. And his name, this is important, his name is Adam Yellen. As soon as you order an inspection, they start lying. Dirty car salesmen just lying and avoiding inspections.
That is exactly what I know you to be, Doug. This Adam Yellen has seen it. His own eyeballs.
Right, right. So, yeah. And I will say this before we go too far. The majority of our negative feedback or our issues with customers has been, honestly, when two people wanted a car and one customer felt slighted because they thought that they had a deal or communicated their intentions to buy the car, but didn't place a deposit and got sold out. We do roast those customers because, like, if, right, like the first guy, the, you know, cash talks, BS walks, whatever. But I will say this as well. Just because I have a platform doesn't make me right. It's easy for me to have this one-sided thing of like, let's roast this guy. But we have had hours of conversation internally regarding this exact situation. And even though it's like the vast exception, it's always the most difficult people, we have said, how do we make these people understand better? Even though we feel like we spelled it out for them in plain English.
English? Whoa. Well, there's your Freudian problem, Doug. There. My goodness.
Yes. I feel like we're on the Princess Bride. marriage. Anyway, we feel like we spell it out to them. Like, we did revise our policy and we did write a standardized script that when people get to this point and they haven't placed a deposit, it's like, boom, copy, paste, send it to them so there can be absolutely no confusion that the car is not yours just because you said you wanted to buy it or are making moves in that general direction. So we did take a look in the mirror. This is not just a let's dump on the customer. We're always right because we're the car dealer. No, we're always trying to improve. With that said, let's dump on this customer.
Before we do that, I do think, and I feel like we've talked about this before, like buying a car is a huge thing. And I think for a lot of people, you know, some people could be coming to you never having really purchased a car outside of like a typical dealer where you walk in and they hold you hostage for 6 hours and send you to the finance department and this whole business. Like buying a car from a dealership like Switch Cars is, I think, slightly different. And if you're inexperienced, you can think these weird things. Now, we're still going to dunk on this person because I think they deserve it because you need to do your research, people.
Right. But if you're buying a house, Do you have an inspection done without earnest money? No.
Well, and that's what, for some reason, people just seem to think that like, well, I need an inspection because the internet told them they needed an inspection and Fine. They think that saves them.
Great. I mean, it does. Have an inspection, put a deposit down. Yeah.
Cause you should know if you want the car. I was really nervous once, but when I bought my 968, I was like, I know I want this car. We talked about price. It was fine. I was like, I can wire you a deposit. And they were like denied me like, no, we know you. We know who you are. We know you want the car. The inspection will get done tomorrow. It's fine. And so, that made me uncomfortable.
Here's the thing. If they had then sold the car out from under you, you would have a valid complaint because they refused the deposit. We never refused the deposit from this guy. He just didn't like our terms.
He
wanted to place a deposit, but on his terms.
Yes. So it's not. Anyway, let the dunking begin. Lots of comments. Don't be yelling at me. Why are you yelling, Adam? So good.
By the way, we're not violating privacy rules here. He put his name. That's his Google public right there. I'm reading from Google reviews. Look it up. Adam Yellen.
There are a lot of somebody referenced the house thing. You don't buy a home without an inspection, or you don't have a home inspection without putting the house under contract. Lots of good advice. We're going to ignore that for now because it's not funny.
What are the ones that I couldn't respond this way? Give me the ones.
Post it on Instagram and let everyone know he's a dummy.
That's what I did.
I love the stop being stupid shrug. Got to be quicker than that. You know, the old commercial with the dude with the fishing pole.
He's
like, you got to be quicker than that. Cause it's like for saving money or something like that.
Oh, okay.
Reference that.
Good, deep reference.
Oh, it's
there.
A good reference. Ask to do an inspection of his financials or knowledge of how to buy a car.
That would be a good one. Ooh, my favorite. I'm sorry.
No, you're fine.
No. Our friend Andrew Miller, my favorite response was his, and he said, tell him he can inspect D's.
Inspect D's. somebody said, laugh hysterically, sucks to suck, explain what a deposit is.
My favorite response, I posted this in the Dealership Life Facebook group where everybody goes to just dump on customers. And the best response there was, can't be sold out from under you if you're not on top of it.
It's so good. My overall favorite, there's a lot of good ones. My overall favorite was, wisdom has always been chasing you, but you've just been faster. It's so good. That is such a cutting insult. Like I'm gonna put that in the bandolier. I want to put that in my pocket. I want to whip it out at some point and just blow somebody's mind.
That's a
somebody
really good
said
one.
You should provide the inspection of the sold car, which I really like. Here's what
I
you missed out on.
I can't upload photos to my response though. Customers can upload photos with their review, but I can't.
Someone referenced Fast and the Furious at Too Soon, Junior, which I love. He
not
do be
soon
yelling.
Enough.
Just use facts.
All right. So despite all the ways I wanted to respond, I waited one full day at the advice of my wife. She is my self-control. Here's how I responded, right? If you had a valid complaint about our lack of clarity in communicating to you that you had to place a deposit to hold the car, that was an underhanded slam, by the way, I'd be happy to address that. Since you're just slanderously accusing us of lying, I'll tell everyone else what actually happened. And so I told, you know, a paragraph of what I explained to everybody here earlier of what actually happened. And I even spelled out that at the end, we're not afraid of inspections because the other buyer actually had a more thorough inspection. Don't mean to knock Lemon Squad here, but we've had some very average inspections done by Lemon Squad.
Well, and with a 996, you want to make sure your acronyms are taken care of. You got to have that peace of mind.
Well, the IMS had been done already, but the other guy had us scope the bores and do a compression test.
Nice.
So, like, this guy just wanted a Lemon Squad thing. Like, we did a way more invasive inspection for the guy who ended up wiring money. Here's my closing paragraph. And I told you, Instagram writes my lines for me. I did steal this from one of the suggested responses. I said, Adam apparently has run into this issue before, as after this happened, he communicated to us via text that many other dealers also seem to be afraid of inspection since the cars keep selling as soon as he gets to that point in the deal. What really seems to be the case is that Adam has not learned an age-old lesson in car buying, which is, if you ain't first, you're last.
Nice.
He then tried to respond to the review, but you can't respond. You can't have like an ongoing dialogue. He updated his original review and he added this phrase. Since they responded,
Wait, is that it?
Yes.
There's no more?
That's
nice.
It.
Nice.
Since they responded,
we'll never know.
I'm waiting for him to finish his sentence.
He's too busy yelling.
Well, if you read his name on an official document, it's Yellen Adam.
Yellen Adam.
He didn't type it in all caps, though, so not a Corvette buyer. All right, our ever popular license plate game. Guess the stereotype. We did have a suggestion for the naming of the game. The name of the game, which was Plate to Sample.
Plate. Ooh.
PTS.
Oh. Thank you, whoever you are. That's amazing.
You like that?
Ah, Plate to Sample.
Fence,
so good.
You like
it? No,
all right.
I like it.
All right.
And it lets us slyly make fun of PTS. Like everybody who calls their thing PTS.
Yes. So the game is, and this brought to you by Alan Hoover of Soul and Spine. That was his suggestion. The game is, we're going to read off a license plate. Forget about guessing what it means. Because typically they're pretty obvious. We're trying to yes. guess what the car is, if it matches up, how good we are at stereotypes. So, Tyler, you get to start.
First one I got for you is Sick 66. All of mine, by the way, dear listeners, are from switchcast.live. You can head on over to the website to submit plates to me, because Doug is much more popular than I am and gets messages on Instagram.
You get 10 submissions a day. Okay.
Sick 66, Doug.
66 Chevelle.
No, ooh, so close. You're like, you are in the right
GTO.
Vein. You got one more. What?
Pontiac Le Mans.
No, it is a Mustang, what looks like a drag car.
You said it was so close. It was,
you're like
it was a
muscle car-ish.
Product. Yeah, okay. All right. Well, all right.
I feel
that's
like
a good plate.
Muscle car guys like to put the year of their car on it, though. Like, that seems, yes. I've never seen that on anything else.
Well, they're very proud about it, because if you ask, like, if you want to seem smart to a boomer, is be able to identify the year of any muscle car, because it's like, oh, that was the only year that had the hood tech. Because
they were, like, changing them every year in the 60s.
Yes, and that is the nerd knowledge that they care about, so...
All right, what do you got for me?
You could almost offend them, be like, oh, man, is that a 65? No, it's a 65 and a half! Don't you know?
Oh my God, the vein popping out of their head.
All right, I'm gonna start. I'm gonna begin with the end here. This is the best one.
Doug can't wait. He's too excited.
I can't wait. Mr. Gucci.
Mr. Gucci. Oh my God. Is this one of those weird like 30s looking cars, but that's actually like a Buick LeSabre underneath?
I am scared at how close you are.
Seriously?
What the heck?
What is it actually?
Yes,
I don't even know what
those
are called.
It's like the Bay version of that. Okay, and it, we have the Facebook Marketplace ad too. We'll put it up for the YouTube viewers. It's a 2006 Chrysler 300 touring sedan, which if you run the Carfax, it retails out at like $5,800. They're asking $14,500, but it is candy brandywine color, aftermarket Rolls-Royce front end, Gucci print designs, Rolls-Royce rim floaters.
Nice.
It is
Wait, does it actually have Rolls with wheels on it? With
no,
the like floating center caps?
Floating center caps, yeah, but it's
is
you
it
know,
the Chrysler logo?
Quote unquote custom interior, all this stuff. It is a very, very poorly done attempt at making a Chrysler 300 look like a Rolls Royce with a Gucci print interior.
Wild.
But
I'm proud of myself for how, I mean, I was like sort of close.
That was the right ballpark.
Yes. All right. Next for you. I'm faster, missing an E. So it's F-A-S-T-R.
Well, can do seven. Yeah.
I'm faster.
Well, it was in an R. Is it play on an R? Like, is it a Civic type R, something R?
It's vaguely something R.
Okay.
So not quite as literally as you're thinking. R's in the trim, I guess.
Well, shoot, no. I was going to say, like, I don't know. I feel like it's some sort of tuner car with a bunch of mods on it, like a Viper, whatever, Corvette Z06 or something like
that. You're in the right vein.
Drag slicks in the back. Shelby GT500. GT500.
You got a little further away. It is a modded Jeep Grand Cherokee SRT8 with like the center pipes in the back that is like the 700 horsepower like Jeep Cherokee or whatever.
Okay. He has more horsepower, but he's not faster.
Well,
you
absolutely
haul
not.
All that weight around.
That's why it's ridiculous.
No, all right.
And who puts center exit exhaust? Wait, was that factory? Was the center exit exhaust factory on the SRT8?
I am not ashamed to say that I don't know because it's a Jeep. Okay, Lucifer with two R's instead of an ER at the end.
Oh my God.
Not sure if that's relevant. It's just, yeah.
Lucifer. So it's a black car because they think they're cool and it's sleek. So this is a C-class Mercedes.
I love when you overthink things, Tyler. It's a Diablo.
Oh,
it's a
really?
Lamborghini Diablo.
Oh, okay. That makes sense. Overthinking is the name of the game. It gets me closer than not. Next one for you, Doug. Big Bun.
Ooh. Well, it could be a wide body Porsche.
Oh, I see where you're going.
Yeah.
I see where you're going.
Yeah.
Is that your final answer? You locking it in?
Big bun. Is it the Wienermobile?
It is the Wienermobile.
Wait, but you did the Wienermobile the other day and it was something different.
Exactly. The Wienermobile has many plates, Doug.
Sounds illegal.
Well,
they've been pulled over for fictitious plates yet. Dang it. I'm good here. I'm good. Rusty Ho.
It's like an F-150 or something old, like an old truck.
How old?
Well, like 80s or 90s. It's
no!
all rusty. What?
No.
What is
no,
it?
No, it's a 2018 Ford Explorer.
Oh.
Yeah. It is registered in Minnesota, though, so rusty is probably accurate. And as of 2019, it already had 53,000 miles
Holy
on
moly.
It. No mileage report since then, but I'm guessing they're racking them up.
Oof. All right. Ew Jorts is the next plate for you.
Corvette!
Yes. What Corvette, though, Doug?
If you said Ew Jorts, it's probably a C8. Because the C5, C6 guys are actually the ones that fulfill the Corvette curmudgeon stereotype, and the C7, C8 guys are like, yeah, let's make fun of that.
It is a C4. It is very Mark Spence in the Jorts with
Spence.
The C4. It's a purple one. He had a white one.
I should
one,
have known that. I feel like somebody sent me that one a long time ago.
Oh no. Well, Paul K, you got it
I
in.
I didn't use it. Yeah. That's a good one. That's a good one. It's leaning into the stereotype. Okay. Tree, T-R-E-E, Tree R-S.
Oh, what is that, a... is that a GT3 RS?
It is.
Okay, it was too obvious. I was going to overthink
you
it
know,
again.
But you know why it's
is it
amazing,
a green one?
Though? I don't know. No, it's not a green one. That would be good play. But you know why this is amazing? Is because the photo of this is of it literally crashed into a bunch of trees.
That's amazing.
No joke.
Oh, that's so good. Oh, I love it.
Yeah. Yep. Self-fulfilling prophecy, that one.
All right. Last one for you, Doug. Depreciate with an 8 at the end.
Oh, it's a Rolls Royce.
Nope.
Bentley Arnage.
Nope.
What?
Nope.
Yes, it is. He sent me that one.
I have a different one.
You have a different one?
I have
Dang, I can't use that one against you. All right. Like a 2000 Mercedes AMG. No?
This is good. You're going to be so upset when you know what this is.
Okay, fine.
It is a BMW i8. And
oh, yes.
Depreciate i8 is in the plate.
Oh, that's actually brilliant.
It's an awesome plate.
And accurate.
Yeah, so accurate.
Somebody sent me depreciate, but it was like 2000 Bentley Arnage.
No, that's good.
I can't
this is
use
better.
That. That is better. You're right. You're right.
Thank
okay.
you, John V. And thank you, REG, for the first few.
Okay.
hit me, Doug.
This is not a Vermont plate, surprisingly. Three lovers.
Whoa. Is it a Utah plate?
I see what you did there.
Well, it obviously has to be a larger vehicle. There's a gang involved. Is it a Ford Explorer?
No.
A Chrysler Town and Country?
No.
What is it?
A Subaru Forester. Come on. I thought I gave you a hint with not a Vermont plate.
You did. I was so focused on the poly nature of that I did not. I was confused, Doug.
Yep.
I apologize.
This episode is brought to you by Sheffield All Sport Watches. The Sheffield brand was recently revived by Jay Turkbus, an owner of an original Sheffield All Sport diver he received from his parents in 1970 when he was just 11, beginning his love of watches. As an adult, Jay used his extensive expertise in product development and marketing to revive the brand that started it all. He set out to develop watches with a high level of quality and specification at a value price. His first effort, and a successful one in July of 2023, was the debut of the Sheffield All Sport Diver 1. It had the kind of build and movement that much more expensive watches use, and his debut price of $108 was equivalent to the $13 his parents paid back in 1970. Since that debut, Sheffield has expanded to a wider range of automatics and chronos, many designed around vintage Sheffield dials of the 60s. The Sheffield well of clever and unique design remains his inspiration, as well as maintaining the goal of high quality, very affordable range of automatic and quartz watches. Sheffield watches, value on merit, not just price. I love mine. Get yours at SheffieldWatches.com and mention that you heard about them on Switchcast. Every now and then, Facebook is good for something. And this week, Oklahoma Highway Patrol posted on their Facebook page, Trooper Rex Grange, number 283, impounded this Ferrari yesterday, referencing a 488 Pista, for taxes due to the state. The tag expired June 2024.
The driver, that long ago.
No, it isn't. The driver, and it was registered in Oklahoma, so it's not like he didn't pay his sales tax. The driver was traveling 106 miles an hour through traffic on the Kilpatrick Turnpike. The driver was given citations for reckless driving and taxes due to the state. Of course, they post this photo of it in front of a tow truck. So they are towing the vehicle for taxes due to the state.
Got
to
get it on the gram.
Got to get it on the gram. So there was a number of interesting responses to this. Of course, people saying, these guys think they're above the law, whatever. If you can't afford the taxes, if you can't afford the plates, you can't afford a Ferrari, obviously, all this different trash talk. Well, and of course, the news outlets basically just posted the photo and reworded the Facebook post. I actually did some research. Not that we are the shining example of, journalistic excellence here, but
what did you find?
I did some research. So talked to a law enforcement officer in Oklahoma City and got a little more insight into this. One, the taxes due to the state? Any idea? Because some states have like a yearly property tax, excise tax, something like that.
So if you're going to impound the car, my guess is it's thousands of dollars, but there's no way it's that much to register a car.
$96.
So that's like not even a vanity plate.
Maximum.
What? How?
Yes, their fee schedule is $96 maximum.
I think I have accidentally, in the past, driven on expired tags longer than this.
I drove through Oklahoma this summer in a Lamborghini Diablo that was almost a year expired.
Oh, gosh.
But here's the thing. There's actually a point there, right? So in talking to this police officer, Oklahoma used to impound or try to impound out-of-state vehicles for expired tags for this taxes due to state law. And they had to stop. The cops kept getting in trouble because they're like, you can't enforce other states' laws.
Yeah. Like what
this doesn't apply to somebody from out of state.
I wonder. So I was driving back and forth to New York state a lot. And historically, the New York state troopers are like pretty intense.
Yes.
And I had one on my bum for a while on expired tags, but I was on Ohio plate, so he probably didn't care.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
So anyway, the owner of this particular 488 Pista has at least 9 Ferraris, and he just forgot to renew this one. It happens.
Forgot that one in the corner.
Right. It was also Sunday, so supposedly very light traffic, right? A lot of people say, oh my gosh, 106. Yeah, it's time for these people to get thrown in jail. It's like, I got pulled over by a Beechwood cop one time in a Porsche 996 Turbo.
Nice.
I think with gray interior.
Yeah. Is that why he pulled you over?
And he clocked me around 80, something like that, 80 and a 60. And he said, the cop quote unquote said, yeah, 80 in this is like 60 in any other car.
I mean, he's not wrong. I got to be honest.
No, it's absolutely true, right? So speeding laws are based on, in my opinion, the slowest common denominator. Right.
Instead of the
See
what you did.
Right. So a semi truck has the same speed limit in 90% of states as a Lamborghini. Now, owning a Lamborghini doesn't make you a good driver. That's a separate discussion. But
I would say most of
the semi truck takes like 4 times the amount of time to stop as any passenger car. And a Ferrari at 106 mph is far safer than any Nissan Altima. At any speed.
I have seen Altimas over 100 on donuts.
Yeah.
Scary.
I mean, Ralph Nader's book, Unsafe at Any Speed, was honestly written in the future as a prophetic work about Nissan Altimas. It had nothing to do with the Corvair. But anyway, so we won't go down that discussion. Most of our listeners are car people, so they can identify with that. But the fact that reckless driving was applied to a guy just driving 106 miles an hour is pretty ridiculous. Most states in this country, wonderful free country, you can speed at that level without a reckless op. And most states, including Oklahoma, require another factor in order to get reckless. It cannot be based on speed alone. So if you're on an empty highway and you're doing 150, they can't technically charge you with reckless. However, it's the cop's word, so they could say, well, through traffic, right? He's weaving in and out of traffic.
That's like one
very
car.
Subjective. Very subjective.
Well, and we've talked before, like the weaving in and out of traffic and the erratic behavior is what causes accidents.
Sure.
Yeah. Most of the
driver error.
Yes. Or like causing uncertainty with other, like you don't want to do this with a bunch of other people on the road. That is entirely irresponsible. Putting other people's lives in danger. Like that's different.
Correct.
It's not just the speed.
Yep. The officer I spoke to also said that reckless operation, the law on the books in Oklahoma used to require a victim.
Oh.
So in a sense, like either it would have to be so egregious that somebody would have to like stop and say this person was being awful, which actually did happen to us once in Iowa. We didn't get a ticket because it was anyway, another story for another day. And we weren't being awful. They were just concerned about our speed. We were not like weaving in and out or whatever. They just were very annoyed at our speed. But like that would imply that there would have to be an accident in a sense, which I agree with. If you're driving bad and cause an accident, like, okay, then great. There is a victim. There is a reason to have this sort of ticket. But if you're just driving, you're minding your own business and you're going fast in a car that's designed for that, why a reckless op? Right? So apparently this trooper that issued the ticket is also known as like the super trooper. He's the guy
Dude, his name's Rex. Tow
his mom's car.
Of course he's a super trooper. Come on.
And apparently another local exotic car owner got tagged by the same cop for an alleged 108 in the same area. Also on a Sunday, he was driving with his wife to church and just like punched it around a corner. There's nobody on the road. And there's a cop just right there. This cop
waiting.
Rex. And
he wrecks a good time. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, thank you. Oh, yes. Yes. And that's why he likes writing reckless operation tickets.
There it is. It's in the name.
Anyway, so that guy got a reckless op as well for driving 108 on an empty turnpike on a Sunday morning. So whatever. It is a misdemeanor charge. It's not a felony, but it's still ridiculous. And the car was towed not for reckless driving, because it's not a arrestable offense. It's a misdemeanor. It was towed for friggin' taxes for $96 or less.
Guarantee you it cost more to tow the car than like a
Well,
1,000%.
Yeah, but then he's got daily storage fees and impound fees and all that crap.
Well, not even for him, but it probably costs like, well, I guess he would be responsible for the tow.
Yes, 100%.
Yeah. That's 100%. Ridiculous.
Yeah, anyway, so just dumb all around. It's the, you know, somebody said if it was an Altima, like nobody would care. They wouldn't post about it, but because it's Ferrari, they want to make an example out of him because it's easy to hate on rich people and people that have exotic cars. I don't like that the state police posted that, but hey, gives us an opportunity to talk about it.
Dunk on him.
The irony of the story is... One of our clients called us this week. He had his Bentley impounded basically for the same thing.
Seriously?
He bought the car 2 years ago. He never flipped the title into his name, which, backstory, in Ohio, we're required when we sell the car to an out-of-state customer or an in-state customer, we put the title in their name in Ohio. So it removes us from the title. We are no longer the owner of record. So they will get an Ohio title in their name. A lot of customers complain about this. It takes extra time. Just sign off the back of it. This is why we do this, right? Yeah. So he never flipped the title into his name, never paid sales tax, and therefore never registered it. He apparently gave it to a dealer friend to like handle, quote unquote, and somehow he ended up with plates on the Bentley that weren't for the Bentley.
Ooh.
He also got a title loan against the car, so he didn't have the title. This is all important because he gets pulled over for fictitious plates, obviously gets his car towed because the plates are not even for the car. Goes to impound. He can't get the car back from impound because he doesn't have the title because he gave it to a title loan place. And there's no record of him owning the car in Pennsylvania. So it's not like he can show him his registration or look something up electronically, because according to Pennsylvania, he doesn't own the car because he never put it into his name. And then he finishes with, he's telling us his story. This is why I don't buy cars out of state.
I think there's a lot of other things that went wrong. Calm down.
We're like, nah, I mean, but this is what I love about the state of Ohio, right? They force us, or the lies or whatever, that we're put the title in somebody's name before we send it to them. Customers complain about that. I'm like, no, that protects our butt, because if we just signed the title off to him, we would, until we proved otherwise, we would be responsible for these impound fees and stuff. We'd be getting notices from the state of Pennsylvania for all this crap. And we'd have to unwind ourselves from this mess and prove that we had sold the car to somebody else. But because it's in his name in Ohio, we're clear.
Whew.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know what we can learn from any of this.
I'd register your cars, pay your taxes. You don't forget about the one Dustin Ferrari
in the
corner.
Oh, don't say pay your taxes. You're a brown noser.
Oh,
you're a
bootlicker.
You know, yeah.
Just live in a society, Doug. I don't like taxes.
Yeah. Put it in Montana LLC.
Absolutely not.
That is not an endorsement nor legal or tax.
Don't do it. Just pay your taxes.
Props and flops brought to you by Switch Cars.
And Switch Cars is the enthusiast dealership where we buy, sell, and consign only cars that we like ourselves. Check out our handpicked inventory at switchcars.com and mention Switchcast for special pricing. Find more information at switchcars.com or come visit our showroom in beautiful Twinsburg, Ohio. Doug, what's the pick of the week?
Well, gee, it's a 98 Corvette Pace Car Edition, one of 547.
That's what I'm talking about.
Rare manual transmission. They're all purple and yellow, and probably one of three with a European rear tail.
Oh, the Euro tails are so good.
Yes.
You know, when we went to the thing, the Corvette Caravan,
yep,
there was somebody else there with a 98 Pace Car with the amber Euro tails. I was so sad.
That's crazy. Yes. The description, you'll like this on our... I finished out the description on the website. Nice. I wanted to say that this was purchased by a Porsche guy that obsesses over doing all the maintenance, whether he needs to or not. I backed off from that, and I just said all the stuff that you've done to it since you bought it. But I did have to take a shot at Corvette owners in general. And I said, overall, this is a very clean 98 Pace car that's been fastidiously serviced by the most recent owner in order to make sure it's ready for miles and miles of enjoyment. Unlike many Corvettes that only see car shows and are riding on original tires and oil that might be just as old, but they've never seen rain. God bless.
That's so good.
Oh. How did you spell God bless?
G-O-B-L-E-S.
Yeah, God bless.
All caps.
Now, I had to do all that maintenance because the previous owner was one of those guys. And tires were like 21 years old.
Yep.
They were rocks.
Flop of the week. Amelia Island happened this past weekend. That's not the flop, but we always like analyzing auctions and seeing what happens there. Overall, on the stuff that's recent and popular, the results were pretty good and pretty strong. The 50s, 60s cars, the real old classics, took a big hit, as they have been doing. The buyer demographic is changing. But numbers were pretty strong overall. Nothing, no big movements in the collector car market from this weekend, except an 89 Mercedes AMG 300 CE 6.0 Hammer. The estimate was 1.6 to 2.2 million, which is unfathomable to me. I don't understand what is so special about that car that makes it worth that much. I love my pre-merger AMGs and all that, and I love the Hammers, but $2 million, it's big, heavy, and not that fast, and kind of ugly. But low estimate was 1.6 million. It sold for $600,000. Well, $665,000.
Wow. That's
just a third of the estimate.
There was more. It sold for less than the lowest than their like spread. Normally their spreads are wild. Like, what is 1.6 to 2.2?
Yeah, that's is there something I'm missing about that car that makes it that awesome?
I thought there was. I heard some things about this, but I really couldn't find anything. Maybe I just I'm thinking of another car. I just think that Hammer Fever is, it's still there if it's sold for this much money, but yeah. I don't think Hammer Fever is.
It was not Hammer time at this auction. Sure. We'll say that.
Well, I think they still technically
when hammered. The hammer fell, the hammer so fell.
I'm out.
Our prop of the week, listener Ed from Chicago previously sent us a quote engraved in wood. And for the audio podcast listeners, you didn't know anything was wrong. But the homeschooler in me cringed because the contraction was Y-O-U-R.
Oh,
in three
yes.
places. And I'm not one to look a gift horse in the mouth, but our listeners are brutal. And boy, did they call it out. So good sport that he is. He sent us a new engraved one, properly done. Although if I was him, or if it was me, I would have totally leaned into it and like done all of them different, like Y-O-U-R, Y-O-U apostrophe R-E, and then just like you are your.
Yes.
He also sent us coasters, wonderful wood coasters. His wood, I don't know if he did this, but his, if he did, his wood burning skills are quite incredible.
So
my sister and I used to do it by hand when we were kids, and that was nothing like that. So we've got new fancy coasters for our drinks here. So thank you.
Heck yeah.
Ed from Chicago. Appreciate that much. Appreciate that very much. I shouldn't.
You struggling?
I can't say anything about anybody's spelling. My speech is terrible.
Thank you for joining us for Switchcast with Doug Tabbitt and Tyler Sanders, produced by Ethan Huffnagel. Switchcast is an automotive entertainment and opinion show, and nothing we say should be taken very seriously. We do not give tax, investment, legal, emotional, or professional advice, and the only licenses we hold are driver's licenses. The opinions expressed on this show are exclusively held by the people pontificating at that moment and do not reflect the values of our producers or sponsors. Our theme music is provided by Emily and Ivory. You can stream their full album on Spotify or SoundCloud. If you like this show, you can stream it in its entirety on your favorite audio podcast platform. Check out switchcast.live for more info.